Epilogue. Betsy. The biggest surprise of it all, by far, has been how well she's adapted to her entire life falling apart. It isn't as though she enjoys being in prison. She's repulsed by the food, and no one in their right mind wouldn't be disturbed by a sudden and complete lack of personal freedom. But there is something about it that she has been able to appreciate. She would never say it out loud, but Betsy can't recall a time when she has been less worried. There are some days when she just reads a book all afternoon. She can't remember the last time she did that. There are moments when she finds herself thinking about Grafton. She can't help it, of course. But the realization will hit her all at once, a mix of horror and relief. Her main secret has already been exposed. After so many years of imagining the worst happening, it was a relief, in a way, to have had it finally happen. The big secret that destroyed her family, exposed for all to see. She has a pang of regret, as she often does, that it didn't happen sooner when her parents were still alive. It would have been better if her mother had allowed Betsy to take the blame for what she did. Then maybe her father wouldn't have vanished slowly and painfully. Perhaps some healing could have occurred before it was too late. There's a scraping of metal as a warden opens the grate on her cell door. You have a visitor. She'd nearly forgotten her weekly meeting with Francis. She'd lost track of time since she'd been here. She stands up and combs her hair out with her fingers, runs her hands across her jumpsuit to try to smooth it out. Her clothes are what she misses most of all. If she could just have her cashmere sweaters here, she could almost be comfortable. Almost. Despite how well she'd adapted to prison life, Betsy still wants to leave. This is just a chapter in her story. It is no long-term place for someone like her. Betsy follows the guard down the corridor. He waves his badge at a keypad that unlocks the door in front of them with an angry buzz. She sees Francis from across the visitor's room. His back is to her. His bald spot seems to have grown even larger in the time she's been here, threatening to take over his entire head. She walks up to the table and sinks into a molded plastic chair across from him. Francis? He smiles pityingly when he sees her. How have you been? Are you feeling okay? How do you think I'm doing? Betsy snaps. She leans in, watching him intently, wanting to shake him down for information. Have you spoken to the producers? Listen, I've been thinking, and I know there is a real chance for us to develop something when I get out of here. Francis clears his throat. It may not be so simple. I don't see why, Betsy says. Martha Stewart went to prison, and look at her comeback. If anything, people like her more than they did before. Martha Stewart didn't murder two people, Francis counters. One person, Francis, Betsy interrupts him. I murdered one person, and I was 12 years old. I don't suspect that is the line your defense will go for, Francis leans back, crossing his arms. If you're not going to be a help, I don't know why you even visit me here. I could be sitting in my cell reading right now. She makes as if to stand and watches Francis's face fall. Betsy, wait. I've been talking to your lawyers. There is something there, you're right. If they can prove you didn't kill Archie. Betsy perks up, interested. There's a statute of limitations on most crimes. Unfortunately for us, murder is not one of them. However, seeing as you were a minor at the time of Agnes Bunting's death, your lawyers and I were discussing a possible appeal to the judge, suggesting, based on the crime and the amount of time that has passed, that it would only be fair that you be tried as a child and not as an adult. And what will that do for me? Well, given how long ago the crime was and how few people are left to testify, you'd be more likely to serve 1 or 2 years at most. Children usually have far reduced sentences. The idea of facing Lottie in court and having her stand there accusing her makes Betsy squirm with anger. It was disgusting how she had used Betsy's departure to swoop in and take over. When she sees Lottie, she will remind her that no matter what, Betsy still has claim to half of Grafton when she gets out of here, half of her father's estate. She thinks of what she'd like to do with the money when she emerges. A nice apartment somewhere near the water. A new television show. One that clears her name. And how long until we can get a court date? We're working on it. Now, this would all depend on proving that you did not kill Archie. That should be easy enough. I was nowhere near him. I hadn't even seen him the evening he was murdered. Well, technically, you were the only other person in the East Wing. Goodbye, Francis. Betsy picks herself up and makes her way to the door. Just wait, we'll make a plan, Francis calls after her. She doesn't turn around, just waves back at him, tilting her hand back and forth like the Queen of England. She shuffles through the common room, stopping to look at a newspaper. Right hand of disgraced baking show host called out for rigging competition in documentary. Betsy picks up the paper, unfolding it to reveal a photo of Melanie. The photographers have caught her leaving her apartment. She looks undone, her hair wild, her clothes baggy. Betsy never had time to exact her revenge on Melanie. But reading through the article, it would seem that Gerald has done the job for her. She always did like Gerald. At least some good has come of that terrible documentary. Melanie and that vile cameraman will never work in television again. Betsy smiles smugly as the door buzzes, locking her inside.